I am Plant on the Line. This is thecommentary.ca. Mark Kurlansky joins me now. The New York Times best-selling author has a new book out, The Last Fishtail. It's an engrossing and delightful book about Gloucester, whose way of life was based in fishing for centuries, but whose future is in jeopardy. Written in the author's inimitable style, it's a terribly engaging book filled with great anecdotes, colorful characters, and recipes. Mark Kurlansky is the author of Cod, Salt, The Big Oyster, 1968, and more. He's won many awards for his writing, including the James Beard Foundation Award. The full title of the book is The Last Fishtail, The Fate of the Atlantic and Survival in Gloucester, America's Oldest Fishing Port and Most Original Town. It is published by Ballantine and retails for $28. I am pleased to welcome to the Plant on the Line program Mark Kurlansky. Good morning, Mr. Kurlansky.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
I was reading some of the reviews for the book, and I think it was the Gloucester Times review. And it said in there that this book is a logical progression from your other books like Cod and The Big Oyster. Do you think it is?
It certainly has a connection to Cod 10 years later. I wrote about Gloucester in the Cod book. Gloucester is historically a cod port. And one of the reasons I wrote the book had to do with the feeling that although people either credit me or blame me, depending on your point of view, for helping make people aware of the crisis in fishing, I find that people don't really understand it in human terms. And I thought that by talking about this old historic port, it would be an opportunity to show what it's about, what it means to a fishing community and to fishing people, and what commercial fishing culture is about.
When did you first encounter Gloucester? Like, when was the first time you went there?
I don't remember when I first went there. My father was from Boston, and I had lots of relatives in the Boston area growing up, and I was around the area all of my childhood, and always knew Gloucester. I can't recall when the first time was I went there.
I guess when they say that this is a logical progression, I suppose that you've written about the sea, about seafood. What about that subject interests you, and do you think you're romanticizing it at all? Or
I don't know. My parents always used to wonder why I was so drawn to the sea. I worked on commercial boats when I was a teenager. I don't come from a maritime family, to say the least. There really isn't any particular reason other than I grew up in New England, I guess, why I should be so drawn to commercial fishing in the sea, but I just always have been. Whether I romanticize it or not, I don't know. I think I romanticized it a lot when I was young. I think when I was a teenager working on boats, I just loved it and had this tremendously romantic vision of it. When I look back on it now, I remember how I noticed that so many of the people I was working with were missing fingers, and how I tried very hard not to lose any fingers, and I remember being careful not to step in loops and ropes so it should be dragged out under the sea and things like that. But so I'm not really sure why I thought it was so romantic. I don't think I would enjoy that much today.
You opened the book with this story about the Greasy Pole event, which is part of the St. Peter's Festival in Gloucester. What time of year does that happen?
Right now.
Right now.
This weekend.
What did people dress up in funny costumes and things like that?
Yeah. People dress up, the pole walkers dress up in all kinds of costumes. You know, there's nuns, and there's always a Dorothy, you know, in the little checkered jumper and the braids. And, a lot of ridiculous looking guys dressed up in dresses and needing a shave, and all kinds of costumes.
And where does this come from? Is this
Well, the pole walking comes from Sicily, as do many of the pole walkers. About half of Gloucester fleet are Sicilian. But originally in Sicily, it dates back to the 14th century, but it used to be a vertical pole, a greased vertical pole, and it was a test of mast climbing skills. But in Gloucester these days, they're not climbing that many masts, and the pole is horizontal over the water. Couple stories up, and pretty hard belly flop into the sea when you fall off the pole. The pole has about a 6-inch cushion of, I don't know what it is, looks like Crisco, you know, this thick white glop. And they stick a few banana peels in there just to make sure. And you have to try to walk out to the end and grab a flag that's tacked to a stick on the end.
You mentioned that most of the fleet there are made up of Sicilians in background. Well, what does Gloucester look like now ethnically? I mean, what makes up the population there?
Well, there's a large number of Sicilians. There's still a large number of the people who are always called in New England Portuguese, although they're not from Portugal. They're from the Azores. And there are Irish, and there are Jews, and, you know, there are old New England WASPy families. You know, there's a few families that go back to almost the very beginning, the Tars and the Wansons. So it's a pretty diverse place.
In terms of how many people live there now?
About 29,000, which is about the size of the population 100 years ago.
And what is it? Do people just stay there, or do they come there?
Well, it used to be that they lost so many people. I mean, they could lose 100 people or more in a gale in one night. And there was always work there. Gloucester is a man-made island, connected to the rest of Massachusetts by about a 5-foot strip of land that was cut through in the 1600s so that boats did not have to go around Gloucester to get to Boston, because it's a very rocky coastline. A number of notable writers have written about boats going down trying to round Gloucester. T.S. Eliot, who lived there in the summers, and there's a famous Longfellow poem, The Wreck of the Hesperus, about a captain and his daughter. That's, you know, they crashed on a rock off of Gloucester, and it was very dangerous. So they cut through this little strip, and in so doing, made Gloucester an island. And it has a very insular mentality, and consequently, it was always an unusually self-sufficient fishery. They made their own boats out of wood from their own forests and their own nets, and Jews from the garment trade in New York came there to make the oilskins that the fishermen wore, and Lepage's glue. Remember Lepage's glue? That
right.
Stuff with the rubber stopper?
Yep.
Was originally made in Gloucester out of fish remains. So there was a lot of work, not just for fishermen, but, you know, carpenters and clothes makers and all kinds of people. And so people kept coming there. Also, a lot of important artists went there because to depict the fishery scene.
You write that in the book. You mentioned Eliot. Winslow Homer?
Yeah, Winslow Homer spent a number of years there painting maritime scenes. And Marsden Hartley painted the rocks, incredible granite boulders. I kind of like them myself. I illustrated the book with pen and ink drawings, and you'll see there's lots of drawings of rocks in there. Great rocks in Gloucester. And Edward Hopper painted the houses. But most of the painters who went there painted the fishery. You know, the harbor and the fishermen and the boats.
How much of the fishery still remains? You write in the book that it's turned into sort of a tourist trap now.
No, it's still the one of the 10 largest fishing ports in the United States. And while there are tourist traps all around it, it really does not have that much tourism. The people in Gloucester work very hard to keep it that way. They torture themselves with the mayoral election every 2 years, and the big issue is always how much tourism to let in, and the place is very tightly zoned for areas that can only be marine industrial. Hotels are not marine industrial, and condos aren't, and yacht basins aren't. It's a big fight all over New England, all over the coastlines of the world, really. There's more money in tourism these days than in fishing. But there is considerable determination there to, as they like to say, keep Gloucester, Gloucester.
Marine biologists say that fishing stocks, you know, could be exhausted by mid-century. How are people in Gloucester reacting to that? Are they adapting perhaps as much as they should or not?
Well, you know, they're certainly aware of the problem. That report that always gets quoted, what it actually says is that if we aren't careful, by mid-century, biodiversity may have been so diminished that it'll become that fish stocks will no longer be capable of rebuilding. You know, it's a very tightly regulated fishery. They're very aware of the problems, and there's a lot of hardship involved in the regulation. You know, some fishermen are only allowed to fish 30, 40 days a year. So it has a very strong effect on Gloucester, on the economy. The local economy is not doing particularly well, and you know, some fishermen have gotten out of fishing and, you know, into real estate and other things. Some have left. But miraculously, it's still a fishing port. It's still an important fishing port.
And despite overfishing, climate change, and pollution, as well as the extinction of some species, it still remains?
It still remains an important fishing port, yes. But, you know, with many problems and difficulties. You know, a considerably reduced fleet, not only reduced in numbers, but the sizes of fishing vessels have considerably reduced, which is probably a good thing. You know, what you want for a successful fishing fleet is for it to somehow reduce its capacity, and it does have a reduced capacity. Oil prices have a profound effect on fisheries also these days. Nobody really wants to have these giant draggers that go far out to sea because it just burns too much oil. It's unaffordable. It's also very destructive, so that kind of works out well.
Now, kids growing up in Gloucester, they're not finding as many jobs in the industry as they once were, are they?
That's right. That's right. And the largest employer in Gloucester is no longer marine related. It's in semiconductors in an industrial park named after a fisherman.
So what do they do then? You mentioned some go into real estate, but I mean, did you find that a lot of them leave?
Some leave, yeah. But you know, the population of Gloucester seems to stay remarkably stable. It doesn't get bigger and it doesn't get smaller. Real estate has become considerably more valuable, so it's kind of tempting to, you know, sell the old house and get a pile of money, but then you can't afford to buy a new house, so you have to leave. A lot of them are leaving, have left Gloucester but not left the area. Overall, it's not a situation like Newfoundland where the population is diminishing and all the young people are going out west. It's nothing that dramatic. It's fishermen are not really that sanguine about their sons having a future on the boat.
Mark, what's a Gloucester story?
Well, a Gloucester story is, it's the opposite of a fish tale. You know, a fish tale is a story that's not completely true, somewhat exaggerated to make it sound a little bigger and a little better. A Gloucester stories always have bad endings. It probably has to do with the psychology of a town that has lost so many people at sea. I mean, tremendous tragedies. There's a monument with the names of 5,000 Gloucestermen who have been lost at sea since the town was founded in 1623, and historians think that that's probably only about half of the real number. People have always lived with this tragedy. They still lose boats, usually in the wintertime. It's a way of life where, you know, people look to the horizon to see if their loved ones are making it back or not. Nowadays, they talk to them on cell phones, which is great. It's still a very dangerous way of life, and there is a certain kind of rugged fatalism to the mentality of the place. I mean, I think that's why, you know, this pole walking thing goes on. Your chances of getting hurt pole walking are excellent, whether you win or lose. You know, you're still going down, and belly flopping in this cold sea and possibly hitting the pole on the way down and breaking a rib or something. And, I say in the book that traditions endure when the metaphor is exactly right, and it's kind of a metaphor for life in Gloucester.
I loved reading the description of a Gloucester story. I think it was one of the reviews that said, it accentuates a negative and usually ends with a miserable ending.
Yes, exactly.
Have you enjoyed your visit to Vancouver?
Well, I just got here, but I always enjoy my visit. And it's a beautiful day, and there are glacier-covered mountain crests on the horizon, which you don't get to see every day here, and it's a beautiful day.
It's still a coastal city, is it?
I'm sorry?
It's still a coastal city for you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. It has a fishery. Those are the places I like to be.
Do you think places like Gloucester, or do you think we could learn from Gloucester, or Gloucester could learn from us, perhaps?
Well, I mean, Gloucester and a lot of other places have certainly learned. I mean, one of the great lessons was what happened in the Canadian Grand Banks. Everybody is very aware of that, and I think that fishing regulations and cooperation on fishing regulations got much more serious after the 94 moratorium in Canada. Not a positive thing, but a valuable lesson, sure.
What are you working on now?
I'm working on a book in a town in the Dominican Republic called San Pedro de Macorís, which by a complete coincidence has the same patron saint as Gloucester, St. Peter, and has a St. Peter's Day festival on the same day, without pole walking, however, and has an incredible fishing community that just goes, they go out on these little 19-foot open-deck boats, and they hand-line marlin that are sometimes as big as the boat. It's incredible. But the thing that's unusual about this town is that they've produced 78 Major League Baseball players. And so baseball has become a very serious element to this town.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. I did enjoy the book, and I enjoyed speaking with you.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
Thanks very much. The book is called The Last Fish Tale, The Fate of the the Atlantic and Survival in Gloucester, America's oldest fishing port and most original town, is published by Ballantine and retails for $28. For the commentary, I'm Joseph Planta.